I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Look, as a trailer, I'm just going to come out and say this. This is in my top three most fun, most enjoyable podcasts I've ever recorded. There, how's that for an intro? I am joined by Leon and Ross, who are an alternative UK hip-hop act. It's a weird way to describe them. Just, they're awesome, they're fun, they make absolute bangers, and I absolutely love them. So I emailed them a couple about a month ago. They came on. It was great. Obviously, we're in lockdown still. So through the powers of clever editing and audio technology, we did this over Zoom. But because I am a massive nerd, I have great microphone equipment. They're a hip-hop act. They have awesome microphone equipment. So through the powers of clever editing, I managed to make it sound seamless, even though we're in three different parts of the country. So I got to geek out over music that I absolutely love, talk about producers that you've worked with that I love, talk about what it's like to play live, what it's like to create your own band, the moment when they first went out on stage, who they've kind of supported, they've gone all around the world traveling, what it's like to be stuck at home for the last year during COVID, the excitement of playing new festivals. We talk about loads. So I really hope you enjoy the episode. Share it if you like it. And as a special bonus, if you go on to createmorepodcasts.com, which is our podcast website, there's the YouTube video as well if you want to watch it live, which I think is really funny as well. So I really hope you enjoy the podcast and listen to the end to find out who's on next week's episode. Bye.
It was in the mountains, it was freezing cold, and I sharted in the middle of a sound check. And it's like snowy and icy. So on the stage, you have to go up like sort of like 12 steps to get up to the stage, big stage. And I was like, oh God. So I just walked back, waddled to the back of the stage, put my cordless mic down, and then waddled off the stage, and then I had to get down the steps, which was so awkward. And then it was all, and the floor was all icy, so I'm slipping along this floor to try and find the toilet, then I'm just in the queue for this random toilet, just like, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. Brand new Calvins, I had to take them off and leave them beyond the cistern.
This sounds like a night, you know, like a kid's nightmare you have. That's you're on stage, that's literally the best thing that could happen.
Yeah.
You're like, Ross, well, it's all gone backwards.
It's one of the worst things.
Yeah,
I really want to use that for the podcast intro.
Yeah, I mean, you could choose one of my two shit stories in the first 10 minutes, to be honest.
We should say Leon was late because he was also having a shit, so that's maybe the... Well, do you know what I've been doing? You can't see my screen. I've been doing, like, I look like a weird stalker / serial killer in terms of research that I've done on you today. I've even got my kids jumping around to music that you've been doing earlier. They were like, "Daddy, what are you doing?" And I was like, "Do you know what? Daddy's not doing something boring today. Daddy's doing something fucking cool." And they were like bouncing around. And do you know what? I was gonna do something fun at the beginning. If you're listening to this, obviously, I'll let you guys introduce yourself in a second. It's too many teas, but I was gonna say stop the podcast. Go onto Spotify or your music provider of choice, and I was going to say my three favorite songs, and you can agree with them or disagree, and you can chime in. I'm going to choose three songs you have to listen to, okay? So I love Better Than, is just the song that for some reason my son loves as well. It's the one song that I've had from yours that I've tried to learn the lyrics. I haven't done that since like an Eminem song a while ago. So that's amazing. One of my favorite songs. And then Grew Up in the 90s, I'll come back to you later. And then the other one, I can't decide, you can decide, is Panther or Start a Fight. I'll let you decide which one is the better one of those two.
Start the Fire.
Okay, there you go. Those, so you stop, listen to those, and then come back to the podcast interview. But yeah, those are my three favorite.
Nice. What a good selection. Real varied selection of like styles of tunes that we do, which is cool.
Because go on.
We like we often just like go on mad tangents and like do something like Better Than that's more like a grime tune, you know, than a hip hop song, and that's it. We just go off tangent and do whatever
it's like
we
if
like.
If we get inspired, like innit? It's like if we get inspired by something like that, Better Than That just came from a night Ross got super inspired and was jamming to, was it a Flux Pavilion? We were writing our debut album with Flux Pavilion. You went on to listen to one of his live sets. He played a tune and all of a sudden you just randomly came out, Better Than This and I'm Better Than That. And it's like, oh my God, this is an idea.
It was, we were buzzing. We'd like been in the studio with Flux that night and the album was just going well and we were like buzzing. And every time we were around there to like write songs and record with him, he had like this big collection of whiskey and like he had like these four different shelves. And it was like £50 and under, £50 to £100 shelf two, £100 to £500 shelf three, and £500 over shelf four. And like, you knew how happy he was because with the day's recording, because he'd tell you to get a bottle off like a higher shelf if he was happy.
Nice.
And that day was a good day, I think. And he was going to do this gig, that he was streaming. So I tuned into the stream when I got home and I was like a little bit drunk. And there was this dubstep tune that was playing and I just started writing Better Than. It just sort of came out of nowhere, like really.
It's just
mad. Wrote the whole verse as well, like that night, you know. Which
it's just a really funny song as well. I think that's what I like. I like trying to learn all the lyrics. It makes me laugh. I was trying to do it to my wife, and she was like, "Stop! Like you're just doing it at me."
Have you heard the follow up?
Yeah, Tougher Than, right?
Yeah.
They're both brilliant.
What other ones do you think we should do? We've been contemplating it for a while.
What, Tougher
quick,
Than?
Faster Than. quicker Than.
Well, I like the lines, actually. Swim. I was going through them. I was going to say, which ones do I agree with or disagree with? And I was like, Better Than Porn. I was like, you guys are good. You're better than porn. I don't know. It's a bold statement.
Got a bit of class. I think it's the next line, which is hilarious. Better Than Porn, got a bit of class.
it was supposed to mean like I'd recently... Around that time, I'd stopped watching any porn like months before, and it was like, I'm better than porn. I've got a better class. That's like the line.
I see. Okay, well, that's...
He watched a lot.
It's on the TV again. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Every time I open my laptop, it's just on.
I have a confession to make, actually. I actually thought... I watched a ton of porn. I saw an interview with you and you referenced each other as Standaloft and Rhymes, and I thought that was your, like... I thought that was your nicknames. I didn't actually realise those were your surnames, Ross Standalot and Leon Rhymes. Didn't... it's an awfully convenient second name for Leon.
Yeah, you could almost think that it wasn't the real name, you know, and I just created it to fit what I do.
Are you saying that's what it is?
Is this an audio or visual thing?
Both. Both.
It is, it is.
Okay.
My real name is much, much more obscure than that.
Wow, this feels very cryptic. Okay, so you do have stage names. Okay, so actually they are kind of your nicknames and now I'm not stupid. Okay, good.
Well, Standaloft is
that's
what's his
my
surname.
Actual surname, yeah.
Oh, wow, can't keep up.
it's quite a rare surname. You should tell him about Bob.
Oh, right, yeah. this guy, when we were touring in Australia, there's this guy, Bob Standaloft, and he traced our family tree all the way back, and he like got in touch with my dad. And he said, if you're ever in Australia, like contact me. So I did when I got there, and he's like this 82-year-old guy called Bob Standaloft, who's like my eighth cousin removed, and I went and stayed with him for two nights. In Sydney, and he like took me around the whole city. He was one of them old guys that like seems like he's about 60 still, and it's like, how are you 82? And he was like full of beans and just like took me around the city. No, Melbourne, sorry, not Sydney. Took me around Melbourne and told me the whole history of our old family tree.
That's such a sweet story.
Yeah, it was so nice. Good.
It's all documented.
And he documented it all, and there's just like a 100 in the world like Standaloft at the minute, or between 100 and 200, and between Australia and England.
No way.
So it's like, and it all like went back to this one point in the 1700s where there was like a clerical error on the name, and that's when it was invented. And amazing.
That's a good bit. You're a clerical error. That was a good bit of a bit of background story. Hey, do you know what? I was going to start this interview by saying I saw you today post about like you could actually do live gigs now, and I was going to say like that's the only thing I've like super missed across like the last year is like going out and having fun, you know, like fun. Because I saw you, this is like a long time ago, like Shindig, maybe, I guess 2016, maybe 17. I think you got like a girl on, like a daughter of someone, right? I just seem to remember it being the most fun gig.
Yeah.
And that's really what I miss. You know, like lockdown, we've adapted to so many things, but just going out and having a laugh and having a good night out. That's
absolutely, mate. That contact, that community, just your friends. And the noise that you get from it, the feeling from it, it's like you don't realise it. And, you know, you don't realise what it was really until it's not there.
So how, like, when was the last gig you guys did? It's like well over a year ago, right? Like even before
it
March?
Was February, I think.
It was.
Or March.
Was it in March, Leon? Because we were in France and France were literally going into lockdown the next day.
Yeah.
And then England were like, so like we went to this show that was supposed to be sold out at a university, and it was like 250 capacity little venue, and 50 people turned up, so like people were just scared of going out. And then the next day they locked France down, and we got back to England, and I think everyone was saying we should be in lockdown now, but we're not. And then it was like a week or 2 weeks after that we went into lockdown. So
that was weird 2 weeks, wasn't it, as well? It was like everyone was like, I think we should, the whole world seems to be going into lockdown.
Yeah.
So you guys have like been, I mean, instead of live gigging is like your pride, that's what you love doing. So like what's it been like last year? Just kind of literally just cut the guillotine of gigs, right? Just there's nothing.
Yeah, no gigs.
Weird.
Yeah, it's been weird, but I think I quite enjoyed the break, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like it felt like a sort of bit of a needed kind of reset from kind of going at 100 miles an hour all the time. And especially the last couple of years, we've been traveling a lot of like kind of gigs abroad, and it's just absolutely amazing. But every time you go abroad, it takes like a couple of days out of your week or a few days out, you know. Yeah. So like you keep doing it every week and all of a sudden you're like just behind on the rest of your life or like on writing or whatever it is. I was just gonna say it was like a wicky break, and then this last like couple months I've been like really thinking like, oh god, I just need to just grab a mic and tear it up and just have that like, yeah, just expend some energy and like feel the vibes. And yeah, I thought that, because a lot of people have been saying that the whole time, and I was like, I feel fine.
Yeah.
and then it's caught me up recently. Yeah,
like post Christmas, it's been like, oh Jesus, really, like the longest, coldest winter as well. It's been horrendous.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been like Jesus, yeah, man. So the first gig you've got lined up is in September now, like proper, you're booking tickets.
We've got some other gigs starting in July. A few other festivals, but the one we just announced today is Long Division Festival, which is epic in Wakefield, Standaloft's hometown.
Nice.
So back, I think we've played it. It's their tenth anniversary this year, and we've played it every single one.
Nice.
Have we? Festival? No, we missed. No, we didn't.
We've not been going that long, have we?
Clerical error.
One, we've not been going that long. We've not been going that long. And two, there's like a couple of years we didn't do it. Yeah. Since we started doing it. We've done about five.
So we've done it every year. Absolutely.
Stick to the story, Ross. Apart from a few. You know, when I picked those songs and I was like, you're like, oh, they're quite like random selection of songs. And you were like, oh, we have quite. I was trying to like, as I describe, I was going to say, like, I'm with too many T's. I want to say your obvious hip hop, but there's so many other influences. And then I was listening to one of your albums and there's like French rappers on there. And I was like, yeah, you seem to have about as faster like attention span as I do for just different ideas, hundreds of different ideas. There's always a thread going through it. But is that kind of each album you're like, we want to do something different? Is that you're just constantly wanting to be inspired by different things, basically?
I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, isn't it? In one way, it's great to have so many different ideas. We're not short of ideas, but we're also not very good at channeling all our focus into one thing and nailing it. And we've been very lucky to have met the people that we have, And then with our sort of opportunistic kind of attitude towards it, we've jumped on things. You're like, Ross has had a better than, wow, that's a great idea. Let's do it. Our debut album, we got had an opportunity to work with a very hugely established artist. It was like, wow, let's do that. We were touring in France loads and we'd met so many French artists and we sort of touted this idea around and all of a sudden that developed. So,
I think that's the word, isn't it, Leon? It's like opportunistic. We've just like seen something start unfolding in front of us and just ran with it.
Yeah.
As opposed to it all being so like intentional, definitely.
But it's like, because yeah. I say hip hop, but then like, at Shindig, when I went, like, that type of festival was very much like, in my head, it was like breakbeats, drum and bass, like dubstep. And then there's like, you guys fitted perfectly into that. It didn't in any way feel, it's like, I don't know, that's why it's like, I say hip hop, but also it's interesting, like Flux Pavilion, I absolutely love. And I like, when I found out he produced, was it your first album, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, South City, yeah.
Yeah, like, I just remember seeing him thinking, like, he's absolutely incredible. I saw him at Glastonbury and I was, like, so tired on, like, the last day and, like, he just brought the energy up so much. Yeah. So it's like, just on your first album, having someone like that, I mean, how did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to not do it, are you?
Yeah.
it was such a good opportunity.
How did you guys meet then? Did you go to him or was he like, I like your music, I'll do an album with you?
Was it a Warhammer convention?
he says that because Flux is super into Warhammer and he like
is he actually
sits, yeah he sits there painting his figurines like as his relaxation time but it was Ojbox, so it was co-produced by Flux and Ojbox. And Ojbox is his producer. He started off making kind of like swing hop and then trip hop and then he was living at my house. And he went to uni with Flux and they were like all best mates from a music course at uni. Like in their halls, like Flux Pavilion got like famous when they were at uni together. And like they were in their halls and like Kanye West came round to their halls to come and like pick up a file of Josh because he put like one of his first ever tunes that like Kanye West sampled it.
Was
yeah.
It that?
Yeah. That yeah. I can't stop. Yeah. They were like,
I can't stop.
yeah, they put it on the Kanye and Jay-Z album, which is just mental. So like Ollie was mates with him from back then, like before he was famous and stuff, and Ollie Ojbox, and he was like producing for us, and he went round to Josh's house and he played in the stuff we were making, and then Josh Flux, he was like, whoa, this is really like unique, this is really fresh, like can I get involved? And so like we went round to his studio and it was like initially just yeah, initially just to do a track, and then we all just had such a wicked time that night that it was like, shall I just do the whole album? And we were like, yeah,
yeah,
amazing. So
it was timing as well, wasn't it? Like he'd done his first album and he was like keen to sort of establish himself as a more varied producer and was looking to like get his teeth into someone else's project and be a producer and be like the glue amongst it all.
Yeah.
So he wanted to do something at the same time we were looking to do something big as well, so the timing of it was amazing.
Yeah, we were kind of like guinea pigs in a way for where he wanted to take his career as he gets older and kind of move away from like EDM stuff.
Yeah.
Not that he doesn't like it, but like just do more. He just likes all genres of music and he can do them all as well. So
yeah,
he's like now he's like making like a Frank Zappa remix album and he's like doing a punk album with this band called Peng Shui. So he's like. That's what he wanted to do, and it was just the start of his journey for that. And we were just making this first album, so it was super lucky. Yeah,
that's so good, though. I mean, just to be associated with that, and then like, did you go on tour with him at all, or like, did you kind of carry on?
We've never done anything together live or anything like that.
We did that one night, didn't we? Can you remember in Bath?
Oh yeah,
and it was Ojbox, and then Too Many Teas, then Flux Pavilion. Was the lineup of the night.
And what was it, a 200 capacity venue in the Nest?
Yeah, tiny venue just packed full of 18-year-olds just going,
it was mad.
It was
that was like the like, it's like peak dubstep as well, right? So like maybe like two or 3 years ago when like I remember Bass Cannon came out and you're like, I love that song, but it hasn't aged. Yeah. It kind of like that style of music has been so worked to death. It's like
yeah.
Yeah.
It had its moment in the sun.
Yeah, that's mental. So like, and then the next album was the one with the French rappers, right? That was the.
Yeah,
I say that,
yeah.
I'm generalizing massively. I'm condensing one album into one sentence. The French rapper one,
yeah. I mean, pretty much. Lots of French producers, singers and rappers. And a beatboxer.
Yes.
But we had a huge amount of success in France. Played a huge festival out there called Transmusical. And then off the back of that, the guy who books it, this guy called Jean-Louis, he's been running the festival for like 35 years or something. He's broken some huge artist in France. He's been responsible for it. And he saw us, heard us, put us on one of the best stages at one of the best times. And we blew the 3,000 crowd away to the point that the next day we had like inquiries from all over France to book us. And we got booked and we went all over France.
Wow.
It was mad because we'd never played in France before, like, and then all of a sudden we spent all 2018 just touring around France just from this one show. Like, it was really bizarre. Yeah, so that's
it
where like
crazy
the opportunity just from that one show took us to just to all these places in France, and then met all these producers and rappers, and then we were like got a label in France, and they were just like, trying to do an album with everyone.
Yeah, and shout out to Banzai Lab in France because they helped us massively, you know, organizing tours and Guillaume as well from Cartel. Like, huge shouts to them guys for all the opportunities in France. It was amazing, man. Like, we went in like just at a whole different level. We were going in and we were, you know, the equivalent of BBC interviews on TV and radio, and but straight away. It was, you know, when you see an artist over here just come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It was a bit like, that's what it was a bit like for us in France.
That's got to
be it. We were getting met off the plane, you know, with our signs and thrown into the car and then taken to our fancy hotels and like meals.
It was completely bizarre. We weren't used to like having a hotel after a gig. That's just not something that we get in England. And then in France, they're just like, they have like chefs backstage and stuff. So like, all the crew will all eat, like everyone, to the sound guys and the lighting guys, everyone, and all the artists, everyone like eats together. But they're like put on this massive three course spread with like different wines, and there's like some wicked chef cooking like meat or fish or vegetarian stuff, and there's all these options, and like we were just like, what? Is this just what everyone gets in France? And
like, you guys get food. I don't get anything after a gig.
In England, you get like warm Carlsberg if you're lucky. That is it. And you get like, and you're like in some smelly room at the back, you know. Like,
yeah. Well, you're given a tenner.
At the level that we're at. So like, yeah, we were punching above our weight big time in France.
Came back to the UK all cocky. You're like, yeah, where's my hotel? Where's my driver?
Yeah, where's my hotel? Yeah. So Sleeping in the car tonight.
Is this going to be like a big part of your plan to go, like the second the borders open, eventually, I'm sure, that like France is going to be one of your like mainstays for your touring again?
I don't know. We'll see. I think like Ross said at the start of the year, it was quite like, let's slow down the touring.
It must be relentless.
You don't understand how much of an impact it has on the rest of your... Just by stopping... Now you can realize how much of an impact it was, how much time it was taking out of your life. And I think we'd have to be a bit more concise with our touring schedule rather than just be all the time. You know, I'd be happy to like intensely tour for a while, but it was just forever, always. And yeah, you couldn't organize anything else, you know.
It's interesting you say that because, like, I think everyone's had this like time to breathe. I, like you, have loved like being at home and having like I work in London. I'm an architect, but I try and do all these podcasts. But I was constantly doing stuff all the time. I didn't realize like how much I needed a bit of a rest. And then now I'm like you. I'm like, okay, I need to be a bit more structured in how I return back to London, because like, I imagine gigging's like a drug, isn't it? You're like, oh, you know, it was so good. Okay, we should do Absolutely. Another. And then one thing leads on to another. And you're like, what am I going to say? No to this guy doing my record. Okay, we're off to New Zealand to do a record or whatever. You know, like, I bet once the momentum picks up back again, you're like, yeah, all right, let's go to a different country.
Yeah. Yeah, let's remember this conversation and ask us in 12 months and see where we're at. It's on the ground.
Because you guys have been going, what, since 2011, I'm going to say? Done a bit of research. I think it's on your
I think that's when it was sort of like the ideas were first incepted, yeah. And then I think
December 2011.
Yeah, yeah, right then 2011, and then we like did our first gigs and got our first songs together in 2012, and then our first proper release was 2013.
How old were you in 2011? Just asking, just curious.
We started quite late, didn't we, Leon?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, we started late in our musical careers, because most people will start when they're 17, 18. We were like, Ross had got a whole career by this point. I'd moved down to London after uni and had a decent career with another band. So I think you were like, I think I was like 25, maybe?
Yeah, it was like 24, 25. Yeah, and I was like, I quit my job. I was like, I worked in construction as well, like a sustainability consultant. Do you deal with them?
Yeah.
In architecture? Yeah.
All the time. Not many of them have gone into a successful rap career, won't lie to you.
Yeah.
Well, so I work together.
I still do it on the side, you know, because like it's easy. Like I work with a few architects and they still give me
some really?
Stuff. Yeah. So like, but I had like a whole career. I'd done like a master's in it and I was like really passionate about it and I like worked for this wicked company and me and Leon started rapping together and it's like this is sick. This is wicked. And then we started doing these gigs in like pubs and stuff in 2012 and I was like, do you know what? I reckon I could just I asked a few of my clients, like at the place I worked, if they'd employ me if I left the company. And they were like, yeah, we'll give you a bit of work. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to leave and do this rapping thing with Leon.
So let's get this straight. So Liam was in a band and then his other bandmate. So Liam, who are you rapping with? Oh, he's a sustainability consultant, actually. He's just really good at it.
He's proper gangster.
I'm just thinking about the long-term future, guys.
Yeah. I'm thinking if this sustainability thing doesn't work out, I should just be like a hip-hop artist, right? So you had experience of doing it before then, right? You hadn't just gone, I'm going to start. It was a hobby in your, like, part-time.
There's a bit of a hobby, but I'd never performed live before. Like, before I was 25 when I first performed live, yeah. Yeah, it was never on my radar as something that I wanted to do. And I think without Leon, without the kind of chemistry that me and Leon have got, it'd have just never happened. Because like we just performed live and it was like, whoa, there's something kind of magic about this, you know? Like, and it wasn't until those first few gigs I was like, whoa, this is like, you know, I didn't leave what I was doing lightly or like take a break. I was like, this could go somewhere and it's really fun. And before that, I just made hip hop. I made my own beats and some raps just for the fun of it, yeah. But I was crap. I wasn't very good. I really wasn't. I really wasn't, man. And like Leon was sick. Like Leon was really sick. So he'd been doing it a lot, you know. Like, and I had like this crazy steep like learning curve the first couple of years we were going, where I went from what I'd consider like now a pretty shit rapper to someone who was all right, you know.
I'm not going to lie, it sounds a little bit like a Will Ferrell comedy if you were to explain this to me. Like, you just decided one day to be in a hip-hop duo and Leon, you're actually in hip-hop. Were you in a hip-hop band before or a different type of band?
Yeah, but I was also doing some like MC coaching courses. I used to run, so Ross signed up to my coaching course. I was in a hip-hop band before called Queen's English. And we all got to a certain age and people wanted to do slightly different things and some people were moving away and it wasn't working in a way. And me and Ross had kind of, I met Ross in Wakefield when I was at uni and we'd like hung out and we'd jam and we'd just like have a few little raps. And then every sort of like few months we'd meet up and we'd write some raps for fun. And then he'd moved to London and then we were sort of just writing more songs together, and that kind of crossed over with my band stopping, so it was a kind of natural evolution of it. And then we started performing more and more together, and nice. The rest is history.
And here we are, because I think like the kind of the theme of the Create More podcast is that that kind of moment when you decide to turn your passion your hobby into like your professional, that's your life now. And I think that just that moment I'm fascinated with, you know, some of the other guys, like one guy's like a massive YouTube star, and it, like, I interviewed him 5 years ago and he had like 5,000 YouTube followers or whatever, and now he's got like 1.5 million and he runs a team of like 14 people, and it was just it was just really cool. Like, he hasn't changed, it's just he's believed in himself and just got better and better and better. And I think I'm fascinated with that kind of that moment where you're like, you, like you two on stage, you're like, do you know what? Fuck yeah, this is a thing. You definitely do this. Is that what it felt? Was it like pretty obvious from like day one? You're like, fuck it, let's do it.
I reckon we could probably pin it down to that. The gig, it was at the Dirty South, that gig in Lewisham.
Right. Yeah.
Where Oliver Sudden was outside rapping at the end.
Right.
And we'd not long come back from Morocco. It was, I think it was our first ever gig, and we were like, it was a proper hip hop heads night. And we're like, hey guys, we're gonna do some raps for you. And people were a bit like, what the hell's going on? But the response was just that, what was that? That's wicked. Whatever you're doing, this is great.
Yeah.
And I think it was a bit like, oh right, this is, this, maybe this is a bit special actually. We should carry on. And then the video that we shot in Morocco, the response to that was so positive.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think we were just doing our own thing as well, and like there's not that many, like in UK rap, a lot of it's quite sort of backpackery and about smoking weed and not having any money, and like that's what a lot of the time, you know, around this time, that early 2010s, a lot of the hip hop was like that, and there wasn't that much that was kind of like on a positive tip and like a throwback to that early 90s kind of block party fun vibe. So I think we sort of naturally, just because of the music that we like, kind of inclined towards that and that funky style. And there just wasn't many people doing it, which is, I think it kind of felt refreshing, I think, to people. And then we were like, oh, right, wicked. I think we're doing something that's like, got its own like uniqueness, you know.
Well, it's interesting to see, you know, that video like I put on Instagram of like my kids playing that song. That was 2013.
Yeah, and I was just about to talk about that one. Actually,
yeah, and so you have it like, it doesn't like, you've obviously grown in like experience and like in like quality, I guess. But like, ultimately, the vibe and the kind of feeling is still, it's still there. It's still like, I think one of your songs says like baseline punchlines. Like it's funny, but it's also good. And you used to do some more serious songs, which I like as well. But ultimately, seeing you live, it's just really, really good fun.
Yeah.
Like proper jump around fun. It's not moody hip hop. It's not like drum and bass, which just has a lyric just pasted on top of it. It's like, you know, like you're actually rapping to the, you know, you built the music and the rap at the same time. It's really good.
Yeah, there's certainly an element of entertainment that we bring to it intentionally, you know, which maybe isn't so much there in, I don't want to, this is generalizing massively, but you know, it's not just about the bars and being sick at rapping. It is about how can we entertain people best? What's gonna work in this environment, and creating songs and live shows around that. I think it makes it more accessible for a much wider range of people. Like the amount of times we have someone coming up to us being like, I don't like hip hop, but I love you guys. Like that's one of the most common phrases we'll hear after a gig. And I think that's, you know, the gateway drug to hip hop, I think we've been called.
Nice. Well, I think because it's two of you as well, you're kind of egging each other on, like, especially like the stronger, the better than, stronger than, tougher than song. It's like you clearly are both trying to like outdo each other, which I guess is what makes it, you want to be funny as well.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, definitely.
I like, it's been like a crazy year for you guys. Like what have you been doing like for the last year without gigs to do? What have you done? What's your like calm time been, other than making a rap that is incredibly hard to rap with a 5-year-old? I was like, you're ready, I'm ready. He's like, ready. No. I say I'm ready, you're ready. Then you say I'm ready, you're ready. And he's like, you're ready. I'm like, no. All right, sorry. It's too difficult.
It's too difficult.
Yeah.
I think we realised after we'd like done the thing, it's like, I think this is too hard.
Yeah, we've purposely written something difficult. How are we going to get other people to do it?
But have you been kind of like investing in the kind of social media site, like trying to build that like audience back up online, and then you know the second gigs are available?
Yeah, a little bit, I Dabbled. Guess. We're not. I think neither of us are massive like social media fiends where we're like on it all the time or wanna be, you know, like. So I think we've been making stuff still. So like every month or two, we've put something out. And like built a little like campaign around it, and like a couple of the things have like done really well, like the back to back rap did, like it was one of the most shared things we've ever had, I think, like on Facebook, and yeah, so like we've like steadily built some stuff, and then we've written a whole bunch of tunes that we're gonna release this year. So yeah, we were just having a chat earlier about like videos and stuff for all the new tunes. So yeah, we got like a real packed year. It's kind of like we were kind of like recouping a bit, assessing our position, chilling out, realizing what we want, having big discussions about the project as like a whole, you know, and where it's like going and how it fits into our lives, and then put out a few things, tested a few things this last year as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's been a bit of testing and experimentation this last 12 months, and I think we've kind of got a nice little grab on it now for the next 12 months.
In what direction have you been going from to test in a new direction? Like, is it, yeah, what have you been doing?
We were looking at doing like, more like to camera stuff and some more like kind of more overtly comedy stuff. So we tried this like little series called We Rap, You Decide. We were kind of letting fans like just give us suggestions about what we rap about. And then we were making up like stupid songs based on what people were saying. And we did that for a few weeks, and it was like just to see if we could do this like interactive thing and see if we enjoyed it. And we were like, it's cool, but we don't really enjoy it actually that much. I think we prefer to write actual songs, you know what I mean?
It was taking three or four days to create, taking loads of time.
Yeah.
It was all our week, and we just no time to do anything else. And great idea, loved it, but not possible with the time we've got.
It's quite labor intensive investing in social media, isn't it? It's like once you start, it's just like it just gets harder and harder to maintain that level of investment.
Absolutely. And it's so saturated, you're almost doomed to not reach in the level that you aim to. So you're almost doomed for kind of a little bit of disappointment. And when you're putting in so much effort and energy, you don't want that.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's so much content, and it's like relatively good, but so much of it that it's like so difficult to stand out. I think maybe that's why your two rappers thing was, because it was a bit rough, wasn't it? It was like you two doing it. It wasn't like the one you actually put on social media wasn't recorded with mics. It was just recorded on a phone, right?
Yeah.
It had that element of like you're a house party or something. That's where it was like, that's what I miss, being with my mates and just rapping and being fun. Like, that's fun.
It's interesting, yeah, because we definitely like, what is it about that did so well? It's interesting to hear it from, you know, not us, what from someone like yourself as to what it was that you found special about it.
Yeah, because like all of like, so which is the one of your videos you did, was it like literally on Facebook Live? It was like a Facebook Live video, right? It had that kind of like that energy to it, which I think your gigs have as well, which I think what translates really well on the back-to-back rap is like that's the fun bit, isn't it? That's the thing that you bring. And I think most of the stuff on social media is so like polished, or it's like TikTok style like videos and stuff. It's like kind of miss that rawness of
this is it,
like bottled energy, I guess, isn't it? It's like running into a room and just filming something and running back out again. It's like there's no rehearsal to it.
I think that's it, the sort of polished thing, because there's some music videos that we've spent like thousands of pounds on, and like they've been the piece of art, you know what I mean, that's like, oh, this is so sick and we'll build this whole campaign around it, and then we do some raps in a kitchen and it pops off. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. But you're right. There's like this sort of like magic element to certain videos, and
it's because I assumed from that video that you guys live together. I think that's where I was like, I'll just drive to you, but I didn't realize because you're in the same room. And I honestly think people are so bored of singular video shots of people just talking or doing something. Like, everyone wants to have like 10 people in a room. In a room, yeah. Inside. How crazy
yeah.
would that be?
Yeah, wow. yeah. Imagine.
So are you guys getting into the studio again soon then? Like, is that the plan? To record another album? Or is it more like singular tracks again?
We think singles. But yeah, definitely getting back in the studio. When we can, when the studios are open again. We're bound by rules and regs and a slightly annoying virus at the moment.
Bloody pandemic.
Yeah, I think it's in like when are they opening, Leon? Is it like in a couple of weeks or something?
Yeah,
our studio in London. So I think we can go and record some stuff. And yeah, we've got a whole bunch of tunes, and we've just discussing just today, like, we've probably got enough tunes to make an album, and it's like, do all these tunes go on an album or like an EP, or do we just do singles? And again, there's all these like questions. It's like, we want to get stuff out, so maybe singles is better. But also just the way people consume content these days, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes you can put all this energy and effort into an album, but someone might only listen to the 2-3 singles that you put out, and then it's just like your core fans or listen to the album. Mm. So like, I don't know. It's like, I think we're going to do singles because of that. And then when there's a reason to make an album, like it's one producer, the whole thing, or we're producing it and it feels like it needs like a bow on the top.
Yeah.
then we do an album. And I think just like, there's something really nice about doing an album, because you get like the artwork, you get the vinyl.
Yeah.
And it's just like sexy in it, you know? So
that's what I miss. Like, I was thinking, one of the annoying things about Spotify when you release an album is you can see which of the unpopular tracks. You know, if you sold like 100,000 albums, you'd just be super pumped that you sold 100,000 albums. How amazing is that? And then you go on Spotify and you're like, oh, I can see like track 7, like no one really likes. But I guess the half of the fun about doing an album is you can put tracks that are special and not odd, but you know they're different, and you put them in anyway, because you'll be 3/4 of the way through an album. It's like a story, isn't it? And you want to put that odder song in there, and then you guide people through the whole, you narrate them through the whole listening process. The popular ones just jump straight to the top of your feed, and everyone just goes to the top 5 songs on your thing, and you're like, no, listen to them in order, because it's like a concept album. It's really annoying. You want to like lock them in, don't you?
Well, you spend a lot of time formulating the order of the album. You know, we went back and forth for weeks talking about that song should go there, because then the energy will dip and then that'll bring it up. But, you know, you're creating an ebb and flow and a storyline through the album. Yeah, and you do kind of lose it, unfortunately, with the way Spotify works.
Is it kind of changed? So when did Spotify get introduced? Like, if you've been going around since 2011... was Spotify, it wasn't that big in 2011. So it was record sales, and now suddenly it's all shifted to like online streaming. Or do you still sell like CDs and stuff? How does it, like, what's the music?
Sounds so old school when you just say CDs. You even said it like, can I say this?
Mini discs? Yeah.
Loved mini discs. I was such a big mini disc fan.
So good.
For those 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, we still sell CDs and vinyls at gigs mainly. So yeah, our merch store's never been, we've never pushed our merch store properly ever, have we, Leon? It's just been like
not merch.
And it's like just been, because we've always performed so much, that's always been the basis of our like whole plan, really, sales. You know, like, is like doing it live. And I think now we're kind of making a lot more new merch, and we've got like a new website launching and stuff. For like a kind of t-shirt shop that we're going to be doing. So nice. We're kind of switching it to that, and then we've still got loads of CDs and vinyls that we'll sell at gigs, but hopefully we can shift some of them not at gigs as well. Like, we still sell them like every, there's a few, you know, like kind of getting sold every week, but
I miss the concept art and stuff in albums, you know, like the CD covers, especially vinyls. You're like, I'm not gonna lie, I never really bought vinyls, but CDs, you had like the proper booklets, you know, you pull them out and it had all the art in it. It was wicked.
And the lyrics and
exactly. Yeah. So
yeah,
like,
totally, man.
They were there. There's good collect. That's the thing I miss as well. The collections of CDs. Annoyingly, the CD collection I have was like like a weird static point in time where I was maybe from like 11 to 21 where I bought CDs. So like if anyone goes into like the other room, it's like, wow, you have a really old collection of CDs.
Yeah. Wow, you've got all three indie of All Saints albums.
Yeah. Hey, do you know what?
Chumbawamba.
Yeah. Did you ever hear of a band called H Blocks? No. Anyway, there was a song you did, and I was like, oh, maybe that's... Anyway, ignore that bit. But yeah, so...
It sounded like a sample from H Block.
Yeah, it was like... Yeah, anyway, it's because I was trying
to... Send the tune over.
Okay, I was trying to work out, like... Yeah. I was going to try and be clever at the beginning and say, oh, I noticed some of your inspirations are blocked. And I was like, I'm not going there. I'm absolutely not going there.
Oh, come on, have you got any other guesses, though? Any?
I'm not going to do them in front of you. I'll maybe email them to you. What about this one? Is this a reference? And then I guess we're coming up a bit to the hour mark, so I'll wrap it up. But in one of your latest songs, Grew Up in the 90s, I watched the YouTube video. I listened to it and I was like, I loved it. And then I watched the YouTube thing and I was so nostalgic. Because you had so much stuff popping up. So, for people who haven't watched Grew Up in the 90s, you can go on YouTube. But I'm just going to read out in the first minute the number of references that you have to things that I hold dear when in my young years. You had X-Files, Power Rangers, Jurassic Park, Coolio, Jamiroquai, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Clarissa Explains All, Friends, Simpsons, Rugrats, Ace Ventura, Pogs, Push Pops, Baywatch, Hooch, Nokia Matrix Phone, Gladiator, Stretch Armstrong, Reebok Pumps, Mega Drive and a Super Soaker.
Wow.
Honestly, it was like...
It's quite impressive when you read that.
Yeah. It was really fun writing it. Like, we were like, yeah, it's super nostalgic. It was like, oh, all that stuff. It just like... Oh, back in a simpler time, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because I could hear your cogs going of you saying it to him and him going, do you remember? Oh, what about, oh, now you've made me think of this. And do you remember, like, it was some of those images I haven't seen for so long.
It was so much fun, mate, writing it and going back and finding the images for the video and everything and the clips. Like, Phil, the guy who made the video, he smashed it out the park with all the clips that he found and put in the video.
Like, there was a weird old TV series that our mate Phil, he was like a child actor, and he stuffed in a little scene from the show that he was on.
Yeah. Isn't it the kid with the clock in the background?
I think it's that. Yeah. I think it's that show. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have this. Okay, so you probably don't remember. There was this really weird show, and I say we now because I recognise the age group now. That like it was something like the boy who sold his laugh or something. It was the weirdest like ITV kids program. You know those ones that they would
was
never.
Was that
get?
It? Because he won't tell us. He won't tell me what it is. Do you know what the show's called?
Bernard's Watch. No.
No. Bernard's. Wasn't that.
Maybe it's that makes sense.
No, that's not what he was in though, is it?
No, it's not. It was really obscure. And he's like, no one can remember it, but
I think this was a weird one that was dubbed. But this was back in the time when clearly telly didn't have enough.
Who sold his laugh.
Yeah, honestly. Do you know what? It sounds like I've made it up, but I've looked it up. And I'm going to send you a link to it. It's the oddest kids program ever.
Send it, because if that's Phil's, that would be amazing. So the guy who made the video.
If you've uncovered this, then...
There's some like, you know, like
Phil's gonna hate you. Yeah.
You know there's cartoons that are so obviously riddled with drug references that are so obvious now when you're older and you're at the time you're like, I have no idea.
Yeah, totally. Man, I'm glad you enjoyed that song. And just hearing that list then of all the things that were in it, it's like, wow, I can't believe we included that many things.
I was going to read them all out, and then after like a minute I was like, okay, I've already got like 30. I can't go through the whole video.
But
that's why I like the video, because you're flashing them all up in the background, and I was like, oh, I remember like when Will Smith, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, I was like, why can't I have hair like Will Smith? And my mum was like,
not gonna work, mate.
You're not, you know,
it's not gonna happen, Ben.
Try and permit for you.
Why don't you guys live together? Why? So you actually have a recording studio in London, and then you've both you were London based normally, but the lockdown has meant you've gone back to other houses. Is that how it works?
Things have changed in the last 12 months hugely. We were living in London, and then lockdown, we both left London, and then I think we both realised that we don't need to be in London. So I moved back to Leicester. Ross went back to Wakefield. And we'll see what happens next.
Interesting.
Yeah. But we've never lived together, even when we were in London. But it was like just around the corner. But we went to Portugal, didn't we, mate, last year? So we went back to our like parents for a bit, and then we both went to live in Portugal for like 4 months of the lockdown last year.
Nice.
Which was wicked.
So it was just probably really useful, wasn't it, mate? Because we actually got time to spend together to have all these conversations and try out these ideas to sort of get us to where we are.
Yeah,
where we are now, and spend some time in the sunshine and learn how to paint a house and do all sorts of handiwork.
It's a proper smart move going abroad during lockdown. I've got some friends that went to like Dubai over Christmas, and they're still there. They may just come back. They've been like, just stayed there for like 4 months.
Yeah. Well, even after 4 months, people in England were like, why are you coming back? Don't come back.
Yeah. That's what people said. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even now I'm like, yeah, why aren't you still in Portugal? All right, so I'll wrap that up, but I want to say thanks. It was super exciting, and actually I'm just really excited to see you guys live again. I would say see anyone live, but obviously even more so you. Is there another single coming out soon or anything? Is there anything on the horizon, or are you just playing it by ear?
Soon.
Yeah, there's a couple of bits. Yeah, we got a tune that we're doing about trees. So like last year we raised like a load of money to plant. It's not a funny tune. No. We raised a load of money to plant 1,000 trees, and we're doing that at the end of April this year. So there's like 30 of our fans coming down to plant these 1,000 trees with us.
Nice.
And we've just made a song about trees and about like sort of about climate change, but mainly about trees. And we've done it with this dude, Josh Whitehouse, who's an actor and musician. And he's in a band called More Like Trees as well. So we've like collabed up to nice. Call, to form Too Many Trees and do this song. So that'll be out in April. And then we got a whole bunch of singles, like nearly one a month for the rest of the year. Yeah.
That actually sounds like a pretty savvy way to drop music now. Not like one album in one go, but actually like drip feed it over the year. And then you've got festivals coming up. Is it festivals? Not festivals. No one's. Is it? It's just one-off days, or is it actual festivals now?
I think, hopefully, it's full-on festivals.
Come on, festivals.
Starting in July. But watch this space. That's the plan.
Who knows? Yeah, there's loads. We've got like 8 festivals booked in, but I don't know if they're going to happen or not. But at the moment, they're happening, so...
Come on, festival. Because, I mean, I was just going to ask, you've played with some, like, you've, like, been supporting some absolutely amazing people. Did I read you went on before Snoop Dogg? As in, so you supported Snoop Dogg? I read it in one interview. I'm not sure if that's true.
We played the same event as Snoop Dogg, yeah. I think he was on, like, 2 people after us.
Nice.
He came in with such a huge entourage. Everyone had to clear the backstage. Yeah. He came through with his entourage, smoking this huge joint, and he was smoking on stage in the club. You can't smoke indoors, can you? Right.
Especially not weed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I went up to the bouncer. I was like, as a joke, just to see what he'd do. I was like, excuse me, mate. You know he's smoking on stage, and the bouncer turned to me. And was like, "Yeah, but it's Snoop Dogg," as if like, you know, he can do what he wants, and I guess he can. You
in
know,
the crowd, excuse me, that's legal.
Yeah, everybody, have you seen? So shut up!
It's so good though. It's just like just smoking spliffs the whole way through his set, and just all the security guards are there going like, I'm not going to be that dude that tells Snoop Dogg to stop smoking weed. Like,
yeah, what's more dangerous, one person smoking or a riot?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, exactly. Get out, mate, Mr. Snoop.
The
Enough.
Size of his bodyguards, you wouldn't dare anyway. Yeah. They were massive. The biggest bloke I've ever seen. I mean, I'm not that big anyway, so everyone's quite big to me, but he was massive. Absolutely huge. You wouldn't mess with him.
We were gutted, man, because we were like, you know, we're playing this event. It was Dutty Moonshine asked us to play with them, and they were supporting Snoop Dogg. So it was like us and Dutty Moonshine doing a kind of like joint set. And we were just expecting to go down there and be in the dressing rooms, and then him being like one down next to us, and we could go and like knock on the door and stuff. And it was like, yeah, like half an hour before we got there, just got cleared out.
Like the president had arrived.
Yeah. We'd been in his green room though, and put some too many tea stickers on the wall, so we got to see that.
They come and punch holes through the wall to try and get them off. Well, I really, really cannot wait for you guys to perform. And actually, just talking about festivals has made me ludicrously excited. That first bit of sunshine we had a couple of weeks ago, I was like, oh, it's summer. It's basically summer. Oh my god, it's summer. Yeah, and now like there's fucking hail outside and I'm like, oh Jesus.
Yeah. It was like 13 degrees, but it was a bit sunny. So it was like, whoa.
It was so good.
I went down to London 2 weekends ago and I went for a walk one evening of these days. I think it was like a couple of weeks ago on the weekend, and someone was having a barbecue.
Oh,
no lie. It's like the first sign of sunshine. Barbecue.
You would though, wouldn't you? I mean, it's because I went to it was funny actually, like I took my 5-year-old to a skate park and it was sunny and he'd never been to a skate park, and I was like, talking of all these 90s wonderful things, I was like, oh man, I used to love like skateboarding and rollerblading, and I'm like, can I buy some rollerblades? I was like, should I revert to a full child again? I was like, this is so unfair. He's got a whole skate park to himself. Like, they've built loads of concrete skate parks near us. I never had that. Yeah. You had to fight against the big kids to go on a skate park, and like you had to drop in, fall off, have the piss taken out of you. It was intense, and I was like, I'm jealous.
You should get some blades. That's the whole point in kids, isn't it? You get to do all that stuff again.
Well, do you know what's funny actually, like you had like a Power Rangers clip in that 90s song, and he's watching Power Rangers, not the new one, the original one that I used to watch, because he thinks it's better, and I was like, it's so weird going into a room and seeing like terrible Smart. Power Rangers that you haven't seen for
he knows wise.
Well, Ross, Leon, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's been brilliant.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for having us, man.
Legend. Cheers, Ben.
There you go. That was episode 28 with Leon and Ross from Too Many Teas. It's always quite fun. I've done it maybe 3 or 4 times where I've kind of interviewed people on the podcast that I was like a big fan of before. And there's always like a hesitation, like what will it be like to meet the people that you really, really like? And it's so satisfying to say they're just really cool, really lovely, down to earth guys, and it was so easy to chat to them. And I was going to give a bit of like background info on maybe how I do the podcast. So normally I would do this in person, and I maybe have a few, like, to be honest, I just have a few questions that I just memorize, because I think it works so much better if you're looking them in the eye, and you get a much more natural conversation. Also, I like to just let the conversation go where it wants to go. And I have maybe 5 questions I just memorize in my head, like anchor points, and then I work around them. But what I did in this one, I had this like huge, like 32-inch PC monitor in front of me. So as I was interviewing them over Zoom, obviously the webcam's looking at me and I'm looking at the webcam, but I can see the monitor right behind me. So what I did, just so I could remember all the stuff, and I wanted to kind of, as you heard in the podcast, I wanted to like make some jokes about the lyrics, and I had to have them like all on a screen or whatever. So what I did, if anyone's used Miro board, if you haven't, cannot recommend it enough. It's like a web browser. It's huge, infinite scrolling whiteboard, and you can zoom right into like tiny little text, and you can zoom right in and have 1,000 screenshots all on one big screen, and then you can zoom in and out. It's like scaleless, basically. And I had all this information. I'd screenshotted like lyrics, and I'd screenshotted their album artwork, and like where, you know, like the songs they had on Spotify. I had like 20 of these things all behind. So what it meant was, while I was looking at the webcam talking to them, I could like very subtly like zoom in and out and see the screen behind the webcam in front of me, just kind of with all this information. So yeah, if you're a podcast interviewer, or actually anyone who likes having like a mind map of information, Mirror Board, cannot recommend it enough. There you go, bit of background info. Thank you so much for listening. On the next episode, we have Deborah Stevens, who is going to be a published author, and I've known her for quite a long time, and I'm really excited about the podcast. I was going to issue it last week, but I decided to flip the two podcasts because it's my podcast and I do what I want. Thanks for listening. Bye.